Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
This is a podcast. We ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for all of you. Hallie, I would ask how you're doing, but we're recording this. You know, don't ask us about time. We're two fucking idiots. But recently after the attacks in Israel, and we just want to say that we are too dumb to explain this to you. There's just no way. We're just two idiots who do a horror movie podcast, but are obviously... As a Jewish person, it is devastating to see that kind of tragedy to happen to anybody, especially other Jewish people. And we certainly feel awful for everybody on the ground and everybody whose life has immediately been thrust into even more danger than they were already in Israel. And so, Hallie, you had a good resource for people to, I mean, because we're just going to try and learn and follow along more and do all of the things that people who try and stay informed try and do.
Yeah, I think, obviously, you know, you don't need to hear the two dumbest women alive try to talk to you about this. It's just not for the best. But I, you know, Allison and I talked briefly, and I think there's two things that I sort of would say. One, obviously, we're part of Crooked Media. I think Pod Save America had a really good episode about it. This will have come out a couple weeks later, but it's called Hamas Makes War, Republicans Play Politics. And it's sort of about both the tragedy of the Hamas attack and then the tragedy of Israel's response and then sort of the immediate rush to make the political point. Like, it's sort of like to use it to make the political points that people are already making. Mm-hmm. And sort of like it's like a broader conversation about, like, we are, as humans, reacting to the horror, which is what we should react to. But then in those moments of reaction, people are able to then seize on that feeling and sort of and use us. And we know we live in America. We had Donald Trump. Like, we know what that means to have these horrible moments and these very human, normal reactions to horror be seized upon. And the other thing is that, and this is not, you know, no surprise if anyone's on social media right now, it's like it is so unfortunate that, like, Twitter under Elon Musk has, like, been reduced to what it is, because I've seen so much misinformation.
Oh my God, yes.
Immediately from both sides, like, people posting things from, like, Syria and claiming it's in Gaza, and, like, posting something from a video game.
Video games,
and claiming it's Hamas, like, all this incredible, like, this level of misinformation. So I just want to talk about that. And then, like, I think the broader thing is, like, I feel like as someone who's not Jewish, I'll be honest, I was like, I'm not even going to get into this. Like, I don't even know about it. But I think we are then all called to, both as, like, humans reacting to this horror and also Americans, where it's like this, you know, this is a global issue that we are also a part of. I think it's on us to learn about, not simply, like, what is going on right now. Though, of course, like, we should strive to get the best information we can. And that does mean, like, staying engaged and not, and sort of seeing as things come out and, like, finding out information as things emerge. But also, like, understanding, like, the history of Israel, understanding the history of the region, understanding, like, how something like this could happen. And I, you know, I think people have compared this to 9/11, and I think that's an absolute fair comparison, because it is a horrific tragedy committed against innocent civilians. And also, the people who will be punished for it are the people who did not do it. Like, there are people who have done, you know, like, people in Hamas or whatever who will be, I'm sure, be affected by this, but, like, both in Gaza and Israel, most people are just regular people who are trying to get through the day. So, you know, and it's not, I think it's just, like, as an American, like, it is our responsibility to know and to become more informed. And Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's like, we're not that we don't know. Obviously, like, Free Palestine has been a movement in our country as well for a long time. It's just like, I know for me, I don't know as much as I need to know. And that's something right. that I can fix on my end going forward and become more knowledgeable of what's going on. So yeah. I think we just wanted to say that.
Yeah. And, you know, we have no idea what's happening actually in the world. When you're listening to this, it'll be a few weeks later and I want to say, I hope it gets better. I don't think that that's what happens, but, I think Jewish people are scared. I think Arab people are scared and everybody's on high. You know, it's an incredibly personal and incredibly emotional, political event to engage with. So, just be gentle to yourself and to each other. And if you don't want to look at horrific war zone footage, like, you don't have to watch it to be engaged. You don't have to expose yourself to those horrors as awful as they are and as much as it is important. You can read about it. Like, don't sit and watch videos on Twitter that are depicting absolutely horrific atrocities.
You know, the thing is, like, because I feel like, you know, we've talked about this sort of when it, you know, comes to, like, police brutality and police murder of Black people, is that I do feel like as a white person, I am obligated to watch those videos. And I do sort of feel the same way about this. Like, I, in some ways, feel an obligation. The problem now with social media is, like, even if I watch those videos, I don't have the context or the information, and the information coupled with them is often false. So it's like, even if you were to watch the videos, what you were, it's almost impossible to know what to take away from it. And I think that's get really scary. And again, I mean, what could we do other than talk about it? We all know this is now a part of our lives, like AI. And then, but even before that, like propaganda and misinformation used to like inflame people's sensibilities, then manipulate us against each other and obscure these larger geopolitical forces where people are always going to try to take advantage of this. And obviously, again, we don't know our ass from our elbow, but we're trying to, in some ways, engage with it in a positive way. So, listen to Pod Save America. They had a good episode. I'm sure there's plenty of people with more erudite analyses, but we're thinking of everyone affected by this, obviously, like an incredibly horrific, I mean, what could you even say, you know? So with that in mind, we were going to be covering a horror movie. And this is like, I mean, this is why we evolved the art of horror movies to have a fictional release for real horror. I do believe that. I don't think horror movies don't exist for no reason. And so what could we give you but a little bit of fictional horror? And that of course, is part of our ongoing Let's Scare Allison to Death video month. Hey. And we were doing a film I had not seen. And boy, you know, because we had just done a couple different movies I've been trying to see or waiting to see and waiting for the right moment. This is a movie I'm like, I'm going to watch this, obviously, but I'm going to wait for the exact right moment. And that moment has come. And that is, of course, 1960s Eyes Without a Face.
Oh, boy.
A classic horror tale directed by, Georges Franju.
No.
It is a French-Italian co-production. You know what? I got close enough. I'm going to say that. Yeah. And it's based on a film. It is, of course, based on a novel? Les Yeux Sans Visage by Jean. Okay. I don't even know why I think I'm going to pronounce anyone's name. And I would like to apologize. There's a inspector in this movie called Inspector Perrault, but it's P-A-R-O-T. I'm just going to call him Inspector Parrot. Like, there's just no sense in me trying to humiliate myself.
Do what you need to do.
Yeah, so I apologize to the French before we begin. A standing apology to the French. We always like to have Allison watch the trailer. And Allison, what are your thoughts about the Eyes Without a Face trailer?
I didn't enjoy this.
You don't say.
Also, like, the mask that she's wearing.
It's incredible.
So scary. And, like, when you think that this is from 1960, like, you didn't need much in the means of technology, like, high-tech anything to make things. Like, this mask is so scary. It looks like just, like, part of the head of a mannequin. But it's so upsetting to see.
And this is a beautifully shot film. It is incredibly, like, all the details. again, not to rag about modern horror movies, because there are obviously modern horror movies with style and, like, attention to yes. detail. But, like, every scene, it's like you see the sun through the fog. Like, you see, mm-hmm. like, trees hanging over the road. Like, it's just, like, the attention to detail. A classic for a reason, obviously.
Yeah. Also, I mean, we don't do movies from this era often. I feel like there weren't a ton of horror movies then. But, man, the fashion.
Oh, we're going to get into it. The fashion.
The fashion of 1950s, 1960s American cinema is so good.
I literally wrote, I am so tired of athleisure. Like, this is, I think,
live in LA. That's all there is.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, at least I went to New York a couple weeks ago to go to Lizzie Borden House. As soon as you get in the airport, there's at least people with different styles. Like, different. Like, yes. Not that, like, they're all great, but, like, oh, a variety. In LA, I feel like it's athleisure if you're sort of rich, or sort of like this 90s androgynous queer look, yes. which I love and I think is great, yes. but it's very Gen Z and it's not really for me. Like, it's not really my style.
We need like a tweed pencil skirt with a short sleeve cashmere sweater. Like,
girl, a fucking high heel. There's a belt. We're going to talk about, I literally made notes. There's a belted, I don't know if it's, I'm assuming it's either vinyl or patent leather. It must be vinyl. Like a shiny black belted trench coat. My God. Like, and that's, I'm like, I want to get to a point where I'm dressing like that. Like, I am yes. done with a flat shoe. I am done with sweatpants. They're going to be there. They're always going to be an yeah. option.
You they're know still what I mean? My house clothes.
Like a little cloche. Like, there's like a headscarf. Yes. Like, it's incredible. So, yes, you're absolutely right to immediately, I mean, worth watching for that alone if you're capable of watching this, which you'll yes. be able to tell once we get to the end of this summary, whether or not this movie is for you. We always like to take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of eyes without a face?
Very. I don't really know if I want to see any facial feature kind of hanging out on its own.
You know? Nose? Like, what about a nose?
I guess nose is the least upsetting, because just like a mouth without a face, come on.
Oh, God. Yeah, anything without a face. The face holds it all together.
Yes. The face is what makes it human. Otherwise, yes. it's just kind of like whatever.
The face is the canvas. The facial canvas. Parts, of course, the paints yes. That God paints with to make your face. And would you like to guess the twist in Eyes Without a Face, Allison?
Guess the twist.
Would you say there's a twist?
Nah, like, I think you kind of get what we're getting at here.
Yeah.
You're getting Eyes Without a Face.
The trailer had no words in it, so it was very, like, I was like, I'm getting the style, I'm getting the no face. I don't know if I'm getting plot. I'm going to guess that at the end, the woman without a face, like, the... Because there's a woman with a face, and then there's a woman.
Now, there's several women with faces. Unfortunately, some of them do lose their faces. And then there's the main woman with the mask who has eyes, but again, no face under the mask.
Yes, she has eyes. I think that she's going to take away other people's faces.
Great. Absolutely excellent guess.
And then they're going to work together as, like, just eyes, no face women.
Okay. Love it. Hopeful.
Like a crew.
I would say a hopeful feminist lesson from Eyes Without a Face. Again, not sure if that's where we're going with this, but...
No, don't think so in 1960, but, you know.
Let us begin. Ruining Eyes Without a Face. We open with terrifying French carnival music.
Oh, my God.
It's like, oh, like, getting right off the bat. And we see, like, there's a car driving. We're in the car. We're in the driver's seat. We're driving down this black and white. So the movie's in black and white, obviously. You've seen the trailer.
Yes.
We're driving down a lonely country road. And we're sort of shooting backwards out of the driver's seat. So, like, you see the trees, the leafless trees hanging over this road, illuminated from below. And I was like, this is hitting immediately. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Please. We see, of course, a woman driving the car. She's got a headscarf on. She's distraught, but she also has a perfect cat eye.
I mean, the makeup.
Which is what you want. Exactly. Her name is Louise. We'll find out what she's up to, but it's nothing good, Allison. And we see her. She's nervously driving, looking behind her, trying to see if anyone's following her. And finally, she readjusts her rearview mirror, and we see there's a figure slumped in the back seat, bundled in a coat and hat. And we sort of see the bottom of this person's jaw and cheek. And this person does not have a face.
No. So it's just skin. That's
yes.
missing.
They're removing the skin of the face. So the actual meat and the blood and the skull is there. But the actual face has been removed, which is hard because what do you do then?
What do you do then?
And I saw that figure. I'm like, oh, my God, it's eyes without a face.
I mean,
over here, eyes without a face.
Who else could it be?
And I would like, they're kind of out of favor. I guess maybe they're not out of favor. I just, Twitter's so fucked up, I never see them. But you ever see, like, people make, like, K-pop fan cams? Or, like, it'd be, like, Nicki Minaj or, like, Doja Cat, where it's just, like, them on the red carpet with, like, a different song. I want someone to make an eyes without a face fan cam.
Yes. Because,
like, every look is so, even, like, having no face, like, the fedora with the big coat. I'm like, it's still kind of chic. It's incredible. Allison, behind them on the road, we see the headlights of another car approaching. And Louise, of course, does what you're supposed to do, which is panic and veer to the side of the road and slam on the brakes.
Not
sly.
Suspicious at all.
And we see, of course, the truck, which doesn't care that there's someone without a face in the car, drives by. And Louise says, oh, she gets on. She finally drives down to the riverfront. Well, nothing good's going to happen at the riverfront,
the
Allison.
The riverfront isn't like an above board space.
Especially in the middle of the night.
At night. During the day, it has a bit of a different vibe. But riverfront at night, that's just crime.
Allison, she gets out of the driver's seat. Again, we already saw, like, the scarf on her hair. I believe it's a shiny vinyl, like, trench coat, belted. Bitch, she is in heels.
Ugh.
She is on the riverbank, muddy riverbank, in a belted trench and heels. She looks incredible. Because if you're going to be serving time, you better be serving.
You better be serving.
Okay. So she goes into the back and drags this body out, which, based on the hair, and we see this little, like, shoeless feet, it's a woman. She just fucking flops it into the river.
I mean, do what you can.
I did it. I said, it's like, if you saw this happen, like, would you intervene, or would you be like, you know what, I'm going to call someone else to get in there? Because I was like, I just imagined watching this from the distance, like, uh-oh.
Even if it was, like, a very chic woman, I'd still be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
she's so chic.
She's like somebody else's job.
Yeah, next thing you know, you're getting thrown in the river without a fucking face, according to this movie, anyways. We then see the cuntiest phone. And this is the kind of thing where, like, I feel like, have you seen... Are you familiar with Delta Work? She's a drag queen, and she has a podcast called Very Delta. We need to be doing what she's doing, where, like, she has a desk, but then, like, she decorates it differently for every episode.
Oh, great. I love
and
that.
And for Halloween, it's, like, a black and white, and she's one of the monsters from that Twilight Zone episode where a woman's getting plastic surgery, and it turns out that she's beautiful and everyone else looks like a pig.
Yes.
But she, like, Delta Work would, like, put, like, a seminal book of, like, queer literature and then, like, a Barbie doll. Like, it's a whole tableau.
Yes.
And it made me be like, I think I'm headed in that direction because I saw a rotary phone. I'm like, I want a rotary phone. They're so good.
Yeah. Just obviously get one.
Big, shiny, black rotary phone. We see it ringing, of course, and a man answers it. He's like, oh, the professor isn't done yet. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I'll tell him when he's finished. Finishing what? Giving some kind of important... like, speech at a conference. It looks like it's at Versailles. Like, they're in this, like, beautiful room, but it's everyone listening intently to the professor, his name is Dr. Genesee. Again, I know that that's not right, and I apologize to everyone in both France and Italy for what I have done. So Dr. Genesee, he gets up, and he's talking about a new surgery that he's developing.
Okay.
And he says, is it not the greatest of man's new hopes, that of physical rejuvenation? This hope comes with the heterograft, which is what I feel like I had before I came out. Like, it was grafted on. I had a heterograft. And it's also good.
It's a straight face.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. You don't want to get a straight face. You hope the face you come out with is gayer than the one you had before.
I would think that that's the point.
But what I like this in a movie. It's not text on the screen, but it is a thesis. We're giving the thesis of, like, here's what we're setting this up. The heterograft, in other words, the transplanting of living tissue from one human being to another, has only been possible until now when both subjects were perfectly identical from a biological standpoint. This means biologically modifying the nature of the host organism. One method involves using heavy X-ray irradiation to destroy the antibodies that create resistance to the heterograft. Unfortunately, this irradiation requires such a high level of intensity that no human can withstand it. And I'm like, well, wait a minute then.
What the hell are we talking about?
Then I don't know if this is such a good idea, the heterograft.
I don't think it is.
And he says, so we reset to exsanguination. We drain every drop of blood from the subject exposed to radiation. Allison, the audience bursts into applause. And I think
but you can't just take away somebody's blood right. and have them still be alive.
And the audience applauds. I'm like, okay, so you're saying we have to kill people? He's like, oh, we don't want them to be irradiated, so we have to drain them in their blood. It's like, well, that doesn't seem like much of a solution. The audience doesn't care.
Are they putting other blood in?
Based on what I've seen, no. So, they're just taking like, faces.
If you're exposed to radiation, it's not like it goes just to your blood.
Absolutely. Right. That's a great point. A
lot of holes in this scientific proposal.
And what I love is they're like, we're just going to say it and people can believe it or not.
We're going to keep moving.
And also it's funny because now we do have face transplants. Obviously they're yes. incredibly difficult and I'm sure a lot of them don't take and I'm sure it's an extremely arduous experience, but yes. we have done it. So hearing now it's like, right. we're going to have to irradiate them and take their blood. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's for the cinema. But I said, this is what science was, and I guess still sometimes is. Yeah. Dr. Genesee slips out the door, and the man who answered the phone rushes over to tell him the terrible news. The morgue called. You hate to hear it, Allison. Even when you're expecting it, you don't like to get a call from the morgue.
It's like, ugh, the morgue's on the line.
And the audience, of course, he barely has time to react. His raving audience streams out. They're like, oh, my God, what an incredible speech about something that we all totally understood. And this woman goes, think of the ramifications for the future. And he tells her, the future, madam, is something that should have started a long time ago. Now, does that make any sense?
I mean, time befuddles both of us. So I don't think that we're exactly here to weigh in on if that makes sense for linear time.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I guess that's...
I guess.
Hey, I'll take your word for it, bro. So he storms out. Unfortunately, he is, of course, storming to the morgue. And as he leaves, we hear a woman say to her friend, he's changed so much since his daughter disappeared. Yes, I imagine you would. Yes, that's a life-changing
that's
event,
a pretty
bitch.
Changing moment.
At the morgue, Inspector Perot, and I'm just going to call him Inspector Parrot. I'm so sorry, but also please imagine a parrot with a little trench coat and a hat, because that's fun.
Okay, well, obviously, that's a movie I would watch.
So Inspector Parrot says, please, he's talking to the coroner. And he's saying, basically, you know, when Dr. Genesee's daughter vanished from the clinic, her face was an open wound.
Okay.
So I'm assuming this corpse of a woman we found without a face, that's going to be her. The coroner says, listen, it all adds up. The car accident, the facial burns, the long immersion in the river. And the inspector goes, and the rats. Don't forget the rats.
What about the rats? What are the rats up to?
I think they ate her body in the river. Or at least nibbled on it.
Oh, I thought maybe they ate her face.
Well, her face was already gone. They would have loved to, but it was already gone.
Okay.
Probably ate her eyes, though. Ostensibly, they were still there.
Yum, 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 yum.
The coroner says, well, it could be her, based on everything we know, or it could be this, because there's another missing local woman, Simone Tissot, who disappeared. And I wrote, bitch, what kind of crazy French town is this?
Yeah, what's going on that they're like, I don't know, we got all these missing women. We don't know which one it is.
Which is, like, based on the movies of the 50s and 60s, exactly what was going on in France, Italy, and America. But the coroner said they called Dr. Genesee, and they also called Simone's father to see if one of them could ID the body, which will be hard because, again, it doesn't have a face, right?
Right. Yeah, that's tough. Do you think that you would recognize me if I didn't have a face?
Well, will you still have your hair?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
His hair face?
Is hair part of the face?
No. That's part of your head, but not your face.
I would say the body they found had hair. So I would think, yes, I could identify you by your...
I think I could identify you without a face.
I think so too, right? I've got other... Yeah. We know each other. Feature. And especially if it's like your parent. I feel like it's like they have been looking at you for years.
Yeah, if it was just like an old coworker, I don't know that like would really
Why
fly,
are you calling like... me? Yeah. So basically both fathers are going to come down and see if one of them can identify the body. And the coroner says, something just doesn't quite make sense. You found a faceless woman's corpse in the river. You think?
Yeah, not a lot of sense is getting made.
And so the inspector says, well, what's odd is the body was naked under a man's coat. And the coroner says, exactly. So they're saying, like, what we're laying out is Dr. Genesee's daughter was in a car accident. And then she disappeared. So the wound is from the car accident. So they're saying if she ran off and voluntarily went into the river because she was so distraught over the accident over her face, why she wouldn't be nude. You know what I mean? Like that would like...
Right. That's not like what happened to that accident?
Right. Well, the accident I think we're supposed to think was like before, like weeks before. So it wasn't like that night. It was basically like she was in a car accident. She had a facial wound and then she disappeared. people, I think, maybe presumed that she had died by suicide. And so they're like, if it is her, why would she be? She wouldn't have undressed under a man's coat. But it's like, but there's a lot of stuff they had to put together. The answer, of course, to that is no, she wouldn't have. That isn't her. So the coroner continues, the facial wound on the corpse, well, it's not like a car accident at all. It's like someone took a scalpel and removed her face. That should have been the end of this movie. The coroner says it looks like someone removed her face with a scalpel. You gotta do a little more research, okay?
Yeah.
I don't... And also, like, outside, there's like, you see the elevated train go by in Paris, and I'm like, oh, I miss an elevated city train.
Yeah.
And you see, like, the sun through this fog. It's all foggy and dark. It's so beautiful. Then Dr. Genesee gets there, and of course, he's horrified and silent, and the coroner introduces him to the inspector, and Dr. Genesee walks with him down to the morgue, and the coroner says, with her facial damage, it's only the eyes that are left to identify her by. And he pulls the sheet away from the body, and Dr. Genesee says, it's Christiane. It's my daughter. Just then, the assistant pops in.
That's who was getting dumped in the river.
Well, he is identifying this body as his daughter.
This body. Okay, got it. Yes.
So then the assistant pops in and says, the father of Simone is here, but the coroner says, no need. Dr. Genesee just identified the body. It's his daughter. This is why murders don't get solved. Let the other father come in and see if that's his daughter. Why are we just trusting Dr. Genesee?
Right. We don't know.
Also, if he's the family member of someone who disappeared, why would, like, wouldn't you be a little suspicious of him? Just to be like, let's get somebody else in here.
Why are you the only, no.
Get
all the dads in.
Yeah. Dr. Genesee leaves the morgue, and Simone's dad, Henry Tussaud, stops him and sobbing. Is like, are you sure it's your daughter? Are you sure it's her? Our Simone's been missing for 10 days. Something must have happened to her. And Dr. Genesee sort of like storms past him and throws his valise in his pussy little French car. These little French cars, every time I see that car, I just collapse to the ground. Like, they're so good.
They're so good.
And he turns and he says,
trouve curieux, monsieur, que ce soit moi qui dois vous réconforter. Après tout, vous, il vous reste un espoir.
How odd that I should have to comfort you, you who have hope left. And then he drives away in his tiny car. It's like, that's a huge red flag. You'd think if you just found your deceased daughter, you would have nothing but empathy. Not that you'd maybe be brusque, maybe you didn't want to talk to the guy. But it's like, you understand, you're going through the same thing I am.
Yeah.
Don't be a bitch about it. Also,
like, wouldn't you have some emotions that aren't just like, ugh, like kind of like turning on a heel?
Ew.
Like, I just feel like, it's strange. It's an odd vibe.
Allison, next day, we see Louise stalking another young woman through town, another beautiful white brunette with blue eyes.
Okay.
Watching her every move. She's hanging out with a friend, and the friend meets up with a boyfriend, and then she's just following this young woman behind her. At Christiane's funeral, we see two of Dr. Genesee's colleagues gossiping about him, like, oh my God, his wife dies 4 years ago, and now his daughter. And one of them goes, Paris, fame, fortune, what does it all add up to? So apparently Dr. Genesee is like the toast of the town, like the most highly acclaimed heterographed surgeon.
Sure.
But they're like, well, what's that going to get you? All your family's dead, bitch. You know, like, they're just being incredibly mean behind his back.
That's like the French.
Yeah. We see Christiane also had a fiance, Jacques, who we see say goodbye to Dr. Genesee and Louise before leaving the cemetery. And when he does, we see a bundled up woman kind of following behind him. Meanwhile, Dr. Genesee and Louise, they move all the flowers into the family crypt, and Louise starts to freak out and be like, this is too much. We've done too much. What have we done? She's also she's wearing the same glossy trench again. She has a black cloche hat. She looks incredible.
I mean.
And Genesee basically is like, get a hold of yourself, woman! You know? This is about science and my daughter. And so they drive back to Genesee's estate, which is huge. So huge mansion surrounded by no trespassing signs. And when he goes to open the garage, we hear what sounds like at least 12 gigantic dogs all barking at once. So we find out he has a pack of dogs, essentially like protecting the house, like intimidating people, and also to do experiments on, Allison.
No.
I know.
No, we don't need to do that.
This is like The Fly where he kept getting monkeys. It's like no one should just be handing out. But of course, he's just getting, these are stray dogs that we find out he just kind of collects.
Yeah.
But also very intimidating if you were to approach the house. You hear all these dogs barking. You know, I think you wouldn't enter. You'd enter cautiously. Allison, he goes into the house and walks up the stairs and finds his daughter, Christiane, alive.
Oh. She got a face?
No, she doesn't. Okay. But we don't see it. She's like face down, okay, kind of like a teenager. Like, I think she's in her 20s, but like sort of like she's in this morose, like her face is, yes, down on her bed. And he shuts off her music. We also see she has a big bird cage full of doves and like a beautiful room.
All right.
Allison, she found the notice of her own obituary in the paper. So, of course, that's, she's very upset.
A tough day.
And he says, oh, I can only imagine what you're, I can only, you know, try to empathize with what you're imagining right now. And she's like, I don't have to imagine it. I live horrible things. What have you done? And he says, I did what it had to be done. Since that girl died after the operation, I took an additional risk. I made everyone think it was you. Everyone thinks you're dead, so they won't come around asking, what is the long-term plan? What if you're actually able to give your daughter a face? She can't return society now.
Yeah, she can't ever leave the house.
Like, what are you doing? This is not a guy who thinks through. He's more.
No, he's in the short term, not the long term. Exactly. Like, he's just not thinking, you know, two or three steps ahead of what's happening.
That's the whole tech industry. I guess that's sort of, as a scientist, you get obsessed with certain things, and now the future. She lifts her head, but before we see it, he grabs her head in horror. He's like, your mask. You have to get in the habit of wearing it just until the operation works. And it will. And she says, I don't believe in that anymore. And Louise stops by with Christiane's lunch. Allison, it is a bottle of milk with a rubber tube coming out of it.
Wait, why can't she have food?
Maybe she doesn't have teeth?
But teeth are on the inside of your face.
I think her mouth is just a hole.
Oh.
Allison, I don't know. I'm just describing what I saw.
She would be able to chew. This poor woman, she doesn't even have, like, she's, like, been pronounced dead and has to, like, live at home with her dad and a bunch of stray dogs while he does experiments. Like, give this woman a fucking club sandwich.
Right. Also, she could just drink milk. It's fluid. Like, you just put it in your mouth. You don't even need a tube.
Right. What's the tube for? Because, like, she can talk.
Yeah, she sure can. Well, Allison, you know, once you start to pick apart this movie, well, listen, but let's just say the whole business is a mess. Her face is a mess. Louise brings Christiane her mask, which, of course, if you watch the trailer, you see. Ugh. It is a incredible, like a rubber, motionless human face.
So
a beautiful woman's
scary
face, but it's all one color. So we don't even have a lip or like a little bit of a blush or like like eyebrows. It's just a dead white woman's face.
She needs to like contour it.
Yeah, that's why I'd be up to every day, like putting out a different look on my
makeup.
On my mask.
Oh my God, how amazing would it be to be doing makeup and be able to just like wipe it off with a paper towel.
Ugh, see, I feel like I'd really get into that just for something to do, you know?
Yeah.
Now that I'm dead and don't have a
face. She's so bored.
And her father says, I promise you, you will have a real face. And he leaves. We still, again, Christiane, her face is still in her pillows. And she says, he took all the mirrors, but I could still see my reflection in the glass of the windows. And Louise says, he will fix you. Look at my face. My face was horribly disfigured in an accident. Look at me. And I look fabulous. And Christiane says, yes, but you had a face. It was damaged, but it was still a face attached to your fucking head. Yeah.
Yes.
He says, I have nothing, and it's his fault. He drove like a maniac that day. So basically saying her father was responsible. She says, I wish I was blind. I wish I was dead. And Louise is like, oh, that sucks. Anyways, here, put on your terrifying blank mask. And she does. And basically it's like held on by like what looks like a headband, but sideways.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it is, of course, motionless facsimile of a beautiful woman's face. And she stares at Louise as Louise styles her page boy haircut, which is, boy, you have to be the hottest person alive to have that haircut.
You really do. That's a tough haircut.
If
you have a face.
Oh, absolutely. If I walked in with that haircut, you'd be like, okay, someone has to talk to Hallie. We have to have some sort of intervention.
Intervention.
Things aren't going well.
Yes.
Also, what I want to do this as a Halloween costume. Incredible.
Well, yes, of course.
Allison, Louise leaves, and Christiane looks at a framed photo of her fiancé, Jacques, who, again, now believes that she is dead.
That she's dead.
Before sneaking down to the stairs and into the study where she tries to look at the mirror, but it's covered, and she turns and she sees a rotary phone. Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, I'm calling him.
Yeah, I think you got to.
And being like, I'm alive, just like FYI. Still no face, but my dad kind of made a call here, and now I have to pretend that I'm dead.
Well, I think if I was in love with someone and they lost their face, I think I'd be okay with it. It would be an adjustment, but...
It certainly would.
I think love can survive a face.
Yeah.
Changing and perhaps leaving entirely. I think we're all hoping for that kind of love anyways. I know I am.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to wait around for my psycho dad to solve this problem after he's really the cause of all of, like, he's the one who got caused the accident. He's, like, hell-bent on making me a new face. He said that I was dead to the world. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I get out of there. I don't think that he's, like, the best caregiver.
I think you're right.
Ruined is brought to you by Factor. It is so hard to plan and prepare and eat healthy meals every single night of the week, but I'm super excited about Factor. You get every meal is fresh, never frozen, and is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. I mean, this is exactly what I need. It's spring. I want to do stuff. I want to stay fueled, but I don't want to waste any time preparing or shopping or doing any of the stuff that it is to feed yourself as an adult.
Absolutely, and I feel like we've all had the experience of like getting home and being like, oh my God, I can't cook an entire meal. So for me, Factor is a great option in terms of like having food there, like having food on hand. It's also me not wasting groceries. You know what I mean? You can imagine, you see what I'm like on the pod. You can imagine what my fridge looks like. In this way, I have prepared meals ready to go. They're healthy. They are waiting for me.
And it's great because you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. So like if you're going to be eating out a lot, you can do fewer. If you're like in a kind of a vegan mode, you can do vegan and you can pause and reschedule deliveries all to just suit your lifestyle. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/ruined50 and use the code RUINED50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code RUINED50 at factormeals.com/ruined50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Allison, she of course dials Jacques. But when he answers, she just doesn't speak. And I couldn't tell. Eventually, she does speak with the mask. But I was like, the mask doesn't have a fucking mouth hole. Like, how could you can't even talk with it.
It doesn't?
No, it does eventually. I just thought at the time, she doesn't say anything. So I'm like, oh, can she not speak? But we do see it move. Yeah. But if she doesn't speak. And so she hangs up. Meanwhile, we see Louise basically stalking this woman, who, again, we find out her name is Edna, this beautiful young woman. And gets in line with her, behind her. I don't know if it's the ballet or the theater, and says, oh, you know what? My friend just bailed on me. I have a ticket to see the show. Would you want to sit next to me? And the girl's like, oh, I was, but I was just going to get one of the like the cheap seats. Louise is like, oh, you don't have to pay for it? That's my treat. And like, I think because Louise is like a little bit older, like it's like, oh, like a, not maternal, but like, oh, an aunt or like an older woman who's like, oh, nice. So then so she strikes up a friendship with this poor girl who's Swiss. So she also doesn't know it. She lives like, she has like one friend from school. And we see them meet for coffee, like, a little later, at some point. She said, oh, I know you're looking for a room. Like, she has a roommate, but she's looking for a room to let alone. And she's like, I have a perfect room. I want you to see it, of course, before you confirm. I'll drive you there. My friends own it. And it's gorgeous. And the rent, it'll only cost you your face. No, she doesn't say that, but we know that's where we're headed, right?
Yeah, the price is face.
The price is face. So they drive out of town. And, of course, poor Edna's like, oh, God, we're going really far out of the city. So they live in Paris, like, going to the suburbs, which there are a lot of suburbs there, but it's like, oh, God, okay, how long we driving?
All right, 45 minutes? Come on.
Yeah, it's probably about that. And she's like, you know, this is pretty far out, so I don't know if I, it's probably too far, you know, to a school or whatever. And Lisa's like, no, I'm taking the long route because of all the horrible traffic. But there's a train station. You can get on the train there, be in Paris in 20 minutes. So then I'm like, my mouth is watering. I'm like, I would love that. Like, that's perfect, you know?
That's the dream.
Of course, they pull up to Dr. Genesee's mansion, and he's literally just ominously watching through the curtains, you know, like, and letting them go.
I wish this guy didn't have a face.
Well, Allison, you might get your wish by the end of the movie.
As soon as I said it.
Yes, Chekhov's disappearing face. Edna is freaked out both by the fact it's the middle of the night, the fact that the, not the middle of the night, but it's, like, dark out, and she looks around. There's nothing but woods surrounding the mansion, so they're not even, like, rural area with other visible houses. Like, there's no one around. And boy, are there a lot of dogs barking. And she says, so all those dogs I'm hearing, are they trained? Louisa says, oh, of course they're trained. Trained to steal your face. No. But she's like, don't worry. You'll meet all of them, I'm sure. Inside, Edna is introduced to Dr. Genesee, and he offers her a glass of port. And I'm sure Edna's somebody's like, oh, these weirdos going to try to fuck me. Like,
yeah,
I was like, God,
it definitely
damn it.
Seems like that. Yeah. That would be my first. Like, I think in this scenario, if I saw everything that was going on, I'd be like, they're just trying to fuck. Like, that would, before I thought, went to danger.
Yeah, and she's like, you know what? Actually, I'm not going to have a drink. And this is pretty far out, so I just don't know. But I don't want to get back to Paris too late. And, you know, I'm actually seeing another room tomorrow, so I'll just let you know tomorrow for sure. But it just seems like maybe.
Yeah.
Louise is like, but you really must see the room first. Allison, Dr. Genesee comes up behind Edna with a rag and chloroforms her.
Great. Before 1960, baby.
You got it. We're throwing the rag. At least we've gotten away from that. I haven't heard the last time someone was chloroformed, and I'm glad. Yeah,
I don't think that's happening much, I hope.
And he throws the rag in the fire, and he and Louise pick up Edna's body and carry her into what we are going to find out is his underground laboratory.
Oh, of course he's got, like, a illegal shop set up at home.
100%. And when he grabbed her, Edna screamed, so Christiane now, like, hears this and starts to sneak down the stairs after them. We see Louise and Genesee take Edna's body into, or unconscious Edna, into a secret door in the wall of the garage. And Christiane sort of hides behind the car. And as they haul Edna down to basically the face transplant lab, which he has built underneath his home. And she sees him come back up and he says, I'll start on her after dinner.
So she's just like down there?
Yeah. And he goes,
I wouldn't leave that up to chance. What if she wakes up?
100%. And I guess we do find out that she is strapped down, but I agree. I was like, what are you doing? If I've learned anything from a horror movie, you don't leave people alone. And he says, this time I'm going to take a bigger piece. One section instead of several smaller ones. It's like, well, I could have told you that.
Yeah. What?
What are you talking about? You were bad at this. So they go to make dinner.
How did he even become a face doctor?
I don't know. Bluster, I suppose. Mm. They go to dinner, and Christiane goes into the lab and sort of looks down at Edna. And then we see her go into the dog run, where it's just like a big room full of 12 ominous, gothic-looking steel cages. It looks like a dog prison.
Yeah.
But because she's kind and she obviously wants like some sort of connection, she goes and she's like petting all of them through the bars. And there's like a big one, a Great Dane that stands up, and she could pet him over the cage.
Aww.
And this is what I would do if I didn't have a face. I would just get every kind of dog and just
I'd have all,
be petted all the time.
Just cats and dogs all over the place.
And we see, like, the dogs are obviously starved for affection, and, like, the dogs love her and, like, calm down when she's there. And she shuts the light off and leaves the dogs howling after her. And finally she goes over to look down at Edna's face, and Christiane takes off her mask and stands over, and she starts to caress Edna's face. Of course, to your point, Allison, Edna wakes up.
Yeah. Like, it's chloroform, but, like, it's been a minute, and you're touching her.
And she sees Christiane's face, which has eyes, but not a face. It is honestly not as bad as I thought. It looks like a burnt Crypt Keeper face.
Yes.
So no nose, no eyebrows, but she does have lips, so it honestly could have been worse, because I thought we were going to see just teeth.
Yeah, just teeth would be a tough look.
Yeah.
Still having some lips or tissue that covers your teeth.
Yes. It was
pretty important.
But that being said, it's not good. It is. It's a tough look.
No one's like going in and they're like, give me the that.
Yeah. Give me the that. Later that night, we see Dr. Genesee and Louise. They have Edna on one gurney and Christiane is on the other. And then in a very long scene, we see Dr. Genesee pick up a scalpel and cut off Edna's face. You hate to see it.
Okay.
And then there's a very long sequence. He has to reach under the face and sort of separate it, like cut
from the muscle
tissues. Yeah, like, and it's quite a scene.
Yeah.
And he finally goes, here we go, and pulls the face. So basically it's been cut around the eyes and the mouth, because Christiane has eyes and lips. So they pull it off, and it's just like, it looks like it's like a piece of bologna with holes cut in it.
Yes.
In the morning, a local man drops off another dog. So I guess, like, Dr. Genesee is, like, known for, like, oh, like, the man loves dogs.
Yeah, if you see a dog, just, like, bring it here.
So it's a very cute German shepherd. It's like, oh, like, someone dumped him in the woods. People always do this. I'm so glad you take them. Thank you for taking him. And Dr. Genesee is like, don't worry, I won't do horrible experiments on him, you know. And he takes the dog inside. Louise comes down. And the idea is, like, this is the next day or the day after. And Louise says, okay, she's eating. The face looks good. I think it's going to work this time.
Again, what is the plan for her and society?
No. And Dr. Lee says, I've done so much wrong for this miracle. And Louise says, don't say that. Remember, you gave me my face. And all I have to show for it is a scar. And she wears this like thick, these multiple thick strands of pearls, like as a choker. And she lifts them up to show him a healed scar. And even that's too much for him to see. Like, he grabs her hands like, oh, don't show me this. And she says, well, what do you want to do with Edna, who's still alive and doesn't have a face? And he says, feed her, look after her, and then I'll decide. Bitch, we know you're going to put her in the river.
We know you're just going to dump her in the river. Come That's on. Like your whole thing.
Louise brings lunch up to Edna's room, which is basically like a cell they have somewhere in the house. And when she turns around, Edna hits Louise in the back of the head with a bottle and runs down to try to escape. And she runs down to the basement, but just as she's about to get through the door, the garage door starts to open and Dr. Genesee is coming back inside. So she runs back upstairs and Louise runs down screaming at Dr. Genesee, Edna, she's escaped! And we're hearing the dogs howling. And finally we see Edna run back upstairs and then a scream. And Dr. Genesee runs and there's an open window, I think at the bathroom. And when Dr. Genesee looks down, Edna's dead on the ground. She leapt from the second story. Yeah. And she is bleeding from the head.
Yeah, that's so all you can do.
Kind of takes care of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, decision made.
So they bring Edna's body to, and I literally was so out of it when I was writing this. I wrote Gravestone Place, the cemetery. God, woman. pull it together.
Gravestone Place.
Yeah, grave stuff. But
it sounds like the street you should live on. Like, right. I live at 235 Gravestone Place.
6969 Gravestone Place. Allison, Dr. Genesee uses a pickaxe to bust up the floor of his family crypt where his daughter is allegedly buried. Though, of course, it is the body of Simone. He busts it open, and there's this great shot of Louise, like, hearing the thumps, and she looks up as a plane flies over, and the plane noise sort of muffles the pickaxe sound. And then finally he gets through, he opens the door, and he just picks up Edna's corpse and just fucking throws it down the hole. And I'm like, I guess I don't know what a crypt is. Like, just a big hole you can just dump a bunch of bodies in?
Is that what a crypt is?
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
I'm going to the body farm. At the police station, Edna's friend, who we saw briefly, like her school friend or whatever, reports her missing to Inspector Parrott. And she says, you know, last time I saw Louise, she was hanging out with this slightly older woman who wore these thick strands of pearls like a choker. And the inspector's like, yeah, there's no way this is enough information. I'm sorry, there's no way. And it's like, that's why, but don't tell the victim's friend that. Like, just ask her more questions. Don't be like, oh my God, well, bitch, we're never going
to
find her.
Try and get to, like, any other identifying factors besides a necklace.
Yeah. So the woman leaves, and another inspector comes over to talk to Inspector Parrott, who says, you know, Edna, who apparently is Swiss, is like, so now that this has happened, she's spirit, then, like, now we basically have a string of missing blue-eyed, they don't say white, but of course they're white, women who look sort of similar. And it's like, so what is happening? And they're like, a serial killer? You know, like, who's doing this? Yeah. And the other detective was like, that's really interesting because I actually have a blue-eyed woman right here and we see her. She was just arrested for shoplifting. And Inspector Parrott goes, let her go, but get her address. I have an idea. Allison, tell me, at this point in the film, who will survive?
Okay, I think Dr. Genesee.
Dr. Genesee.
Is gonna die.
Okay.
I think everybody else will survive.
Okay, great. We catch back up with them, and it's Dr. Genesee, Louise, and Christiane eating lunch. And Dr. Genesee cannot believe how good the face looks. And Christiane is played by Edith Scoob. And let me just say, she is incredible in this movie because now that she has a face, she basically, like, her face looks stunning, but she can't really move it. So a lot of her acting from now until the end of the movie is her being very expressionless in, this very particular way that's so creepy and so affecting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just kind of like the mask, but.
Yes. Yeah. Because, like, just because she has a face doesn't mean, like, it's necessarily all reconnected to everything. Yeah.
Right.
And Christiane's like, okay, great. It does look good. I'm glad I have a face. But how do I come back to life? And he says, well, here's what we'll do. It'll take a long trip. We'll get you new papers, new name to go with your new face. You'll be a whole new person. It'll be fun. We can, like, plan your new person you're going to be.
Like, no.
Christiane's like, but I got a boyfriend.
Yeah, I had a life.
Yeah. And Louise says, you're even more beautiful than before. You look angelic. And Christiane says, I don't feel angelic. I look in the mirror and it gives you the feeling that I'm looking at something from beyond. And so she's having this, like, existential, like, I have another woman's face on my face. And then she finally asks, like, well, what about Jacques, my fiance? And Dr. Joyce is like, oh, yeah, that guy. Ooh, yeah, we'll have to explain it to him. Obviously, he has no plans of doing this.
Right.
He tells his daughter to smile, but when she tries to smile, it's too big. He's like, not too much. I don't want you to hurt the face. Just then, the phone rings. It's a call by Dr. Genesee's patient. And it turns out that he runs a clinic. And it seems like it's all, because I was like, oh, it's going to be like all facial repair. It's all over the place. Like, it's like a mental health clinic. Like, people are like migraines. There's like a kid there. I don't know. It's some kind of clinic that he runs.
All over the place.
He has to rush out. Yeah. So he kisses Christiane goodbye. But when he does, he looks sort of like at distress, like at the seam near her forehead. There's like a visible seam. And he says, you haven't been wearing makeup, have you? She says, no. She's like, oh, no. Just you look so good. You have rosy cheeks. Obviously, that's not what he was saying.
Yeah. It's like, oh, where I put this face on your no face is showing.
Yeah. Outside, Dr. Z like smokes and Louise follows him and says, like, why did you look so nervous when you were looking at her? And he's like, no reason. And of course, he's lying. And he says, I failed. Allison, we then see Dr. Genesee in voiceover and a series of photos. And over the course of the next 3 weeks, we see Christiane's face in photos rot off her head. The heterograph did not take, Allison.
Oh. Okay.
Second time was not the charm.
Nope.
Now, of course, now we see Christiane.
I would rather not have a face than have a face rot off of my head.
What is it? First face, shame on you. Second face, shame on me.
Shame
I'm not
on
doing
me.
A third one.
No.
Of course, we see Christiane back in her room, petulant, down on the rug, and Louise brings her the mask to put on again. In the lab, we see Dr. Genesee experimenting on the dogs. We see him experimenting on the new German Shepherd. Basically, it looks like he's like taking like pieces of the skin and transplanting it around. Oh, just horrible shit. You know what I mean? Just like experimenting on dogs to try to like, even if that, it's like, that's still a dog. It's not even the same thing.
You're right. Yeah. Like, it's not, their faces have fur.
Finally, Christiane gets the nerve up to sneak out of her room and down to the drawing room to call Jacques, which he clearly calls him all the time, doesn't say anything because he picks up. He's like, oh my God, why do you keep calling? Yeah. You don't say anything. She finally says his name and he knows immediately it's her.
Of course.
And then Louise rushes in and hangs up the phone. She's like, but she didn't realize, she just assumed Christiane had just picked up the phone. She didn't realize that she'd spoken to Jacques. Mm-hmm. And Christiane finally breaks down. It was like, I am dead to the world. Then let me just be dead. Like, just let me die. I can't touch my face. I don't know how to do this. Louise says, you have to have faith in your father. And Christiane says, no, he has injections he gives the dogs when something goes wrong. You have to get one. You have to kill me. I can't stand it. Mm. But of course, Louise is not going to do that.
Right.
And so she's like, no, you're just going to live in this terrible purgatory in your father's house. So Jacques, smartly, immediately goes to Inspector Parrott. But of course, the inspector's like, I don't know. He came down and identified the body. And Jacques says, I hear you, but something is wrong. And I recognized her voice. I think I recognized it. And Inspector Parrott's like, oh my God, that's wrong. Everyone thinks they recognize things. Like, oh, and starts picking up his police reports. Like, oh, I think I saw a man in a red truck. I think I saw a woman in a pearl choker. And Jacques Stassum says, a pearl choker? I know that bitch. Meanwhile, we now see Louisa stalking another new young woman with a beautiful face.
She is that bitch, so.
Yes. And eventually you're going to get a reputation of hanging out with these beautiful young women who then show up with their faces missing.
Yeah, disappear. Yeah.
So the inspectors bring in the shoplifter we saw earlier. Her name is Paulette. And basically lie to her and say, like, you'll have to go undercover for us or you will have to go to trial then go to prison for shoplifting. And this is her first offense. So she's like, oh, no, my parents can't find out. So which just seems like something that cops do is just lie to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they say you have to go blonde and we'll admit you to a clinic and complain of migraines. I don't understand why she had to go blonde.
What did the blonde have to do with it?
I don't know, but she looks fabulous. She looks fabulous.
I mean, of course.
I was like, okay, fun. I guess a disguise what she looks like. I don't know. Allison, whose clinic is she being checked into? Why, that's right. It's Dr. Genesee.
Yes, of course.
And of course, he's being like, what a beautiful face on this lady. You know, he immediately sees that face.
Yeah.
And we also find out, like, Jacques works for Dr. Genesee. Like, that's how they know each other, and that's how he met Christiane. So Jacques still works at the clinic. And, you know, Paulette's talking about her migraines. And I guess at the time, they would have treated you with an electroencephalogram. I'm like, sure. I guess that's what we're doing in the 60s. And then we have, he goes to see a little boy. And unfortunately, the little boy cannot answer how many fingers Genesee is holding up. And mother asks, can you save him? It's like, what, from being a dumbass? Like, he's just a kid. Like, leave him alone. This is like a little kid.
Maybe you teach him an account. This is a you problem, lady.
And he says, of course we could fix him. But out in the hallway, Jock's like, what's your diagnosis? Do you think we could fix him? The doctor says, what's yours? And they stare at each other, and Dr. Lacey says, so we agree. So, like, what, are we going to euthanize this kid? Like, what?
What? Because he can't count?
Yeah, like, what are we talking about? Meanwhile, we see Paulette get her encephalogram. Great scene where we see, like, the nurse put her electrodes on her head. Yeah. And then, like, flashes a light to sort of, I guess, induce a migraine. And Dr. Genesee comes in behind the nurse and is just watching Paulette's beautiful face and her eyes reacting to the light. So, of course, you know he's going to try to take that face.
He wants that face.
Back at the office, he tells Jacques there's nothing wrong with that Paulette woman. You know, she must have had migraines, but it seems fine. Here are her test results. And they tell Paulette, like, hey, you seem like you're good. Which, like, if you actually had migraines, I'm sure you're like, but I still have migraines.
Help.
Yeah, right. Help me. So they release her, and she's fine. She, again, also is in a belted trench with, like, a suitcase. Oh, it's so good. I want a suitcase. Like a little valise.
It's, like, such an impractical item. But
yes. Ugh,
boy,
it's so
is
good.
It chic with a trench and heels.
Yeah. And so she, from the nurse's station, calls her mother saying, I'm going to be home, you know, in half an hour. And she says, where's the bus back to Paris? She says, oh, you just take the bus. It's, like, a 15-minute walk straight down, and you won't miss it. And then you can take it right into Paris. It's the middle of the fucking night. And it's like, right. There are no streetlights. There's no houses around. This woman is walking on cobblestones.
In heels.
We see the cuntiest little French car pull up. It is Louise, who offers a lift to a fellow woman in need. And they drive off into the night. Jacques, meanwhile, says, okay, they checked out Paulette. You know, nothing weird happened. So I don't know. Maybe I was just being crazy, but Paulette's been checked out, and the inspector says, okay, we'll make sure she'll get home okay. Cut to Paulette already in the face transplant lab, about to get her fucking face cut off. Like, they're just getting into it, right?
Yeah. They're like, we don't need to tell you how she got back here. You know.
You get it. And then Louise busts in and say, there are two men at the clinic. And he's like, I'll tell him. I'll talk to them tomorrow. She whispers in his ear, I'm assuming it's the police, and he undresses to go to work. And we see that Christiane is sitting in the lab in a fabulous dressing gown was about to watch her father take the face off, which I'm like, oh, that's also insane. Like, on a chaise lounge in like an underground lab.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Allison, we see Dr. Genesee walk outside in his scrubs. I'm like, what is he doing? The clinic is like 500 feet from his house. I did not understand that the whole time.
Oh,
I assumed it was in the same town, but I was like, so he's just walking
there?
But,
like, not on his property.
Yeah, but that's not me. So it's Inspector Parrott and his little friend, the other inspector. He tells him, Paulette, it was one of your patients, was released earlier this evening. She never arrived home, and her mother is panicking. So he says, let me pull up her files. Pulls the files. Like, you know, I'll be honest, like, she checked out. Everything seemed fine. So once they leave my doors, the patients are no longer my responsibility. And the doctor's like, that's fine. She's kind of mixed up in a case we're involved in. We just want to talk to her. I'm sure she's fine. You know, I'm sure she hasn't about to get her face removed. And so they, as they walk out, Jacques also walks out. And Genesee says, oh, Jacques, since you're leaving, please see these men out. And out there, Jacques kind of, like, is apologizing. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I guess I thought something weird was going on. But, like, that woman left and everything was fine. So I don't know. I just feel like there's all these coincidences in the call, so I'm sorry. And the inspector's like, oh, don't feel bad about it. You know what I mean? This is because your fiance disappeared and you've gone insane too. So no hard feelings. I'm sure Paulette's fine. Meanwhile, we see Paulette wake up on the gurney to see Christiane approaching with a scalpel.
And she's like, is she going to do it?
We see, of course, Paulette's assuming her face is about to be removed. Christiane reaches down and cuts her bindings that are strapping her to the table.
Oh, that's nice.
And Louise rushes in and tries to stop Christiane, and Christiane stabs her in the neck right in her scar.
And Louise, I didn't see that happening to Louise. I thought she was going to kind of make it out because, like, she technically is a victim from long ago. But
she's done too much. She's
done too much. No, of course. I mean, she's dumping bodies in rivers and crypts and tricking young women. Yeah. We don't need her.
And Louise says, why? And slumps to the floor. It's like, you know why. What are you talking about? Why? So then Paulette runs out of the house, and Christiane goes into the dog run and just starts releasing all the dogs. And they all run to there's an exterior door that Dr. Genesee opens right as he arrives home.
Okay.
And as soon as he opens the door, the German Shepherd, the one he was experimenting on, attacks him.
Good.
And then all the other dogs run out in a pack, and they—
Justice for the dogs.
And they tear him apart, Allison.
Great.
And then in the best shot, like, probably this is one of my top 10 favorite shots of all of cinema, we see Christiane also open the bird cage they had and release all the doves.
Yes.
In case we didn't get it. Release all the doves. Then finally, she too walks out of the exterior door a dove perched on her arm, and she's wearing like this fabulous dressing gown, and she's wearing the mask. And that's the Halloween costume.
Yeah, that's the Halloween costume.
And she sort of has to hold her arm in front of her so the dove is comfortable. And she finds her father's body. Allison, his face has been ripped off by the dogs.
Way to go, dogs.
And as the white doves fly around her, she walks and she is free. The Eyes Without a Face.
Wow. What a movie.
What a film. It's so good. Please watch it. I believe it's on Max right now. Nice. Yeah, that's where I watch it. Absolute 10 out of 10. No notes. What are some fatal mistakes you think people have made in the movie Eyes Without a Face?
Fatal mistakes.
The hubris of thinking you could do this medical doctor.
That's the mistake.
And also to be doing it privately and not like with the assistance of other medical professionals. Like, I feel like if this was like a group run clinic that wasn't, you know, next door to his house, and this is what people were trying to do. Also lying and telling the world that your daughter is dead when she's not, just so you can keep stealing the faces of other young women.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, you know, I think you really summed it up here. It's just hubris, overweening pride, is sort of the ultimate fatal mistake. And then finally, where would you place Eyes Without a Face on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I think that a lot of this I could have watched, but the mask is so scary. So 6.
Yeah, I think it is more of a thriller, but the face stuff, yes,
you know,
the face stuff really does take it to another level.
That mask is really upsetting. So yeah, I'm saying 6. What are you saying?
I'm gonna go 7.
Yeah, wow.
This is, I think, just everything about it just hit me just right.
Yeah,
and yeah, I like a captive. Anything with a face removal is horrifying to me. Yeah, a 7 feels right. This got me good.
Yeah.
I also want to say before we leave, another, just to cycle back to our conversations at the top of the podcast, there's a great episode of What a Day, which is also another Crooked podcast. It's like our daily podcast. That's really excellent. Yes. Does a lot of great coverage. And they have a episode that, again, will have already come out called Not Some Distant Tragedy. About everything.
Oh, great.
So again, an excellent piece of work. So I just want to shout out that episode, but also What a Day in general. If you're looking for a daily podcast that is like covering things as they happen, it's a really excellent one. Oh, nice. Well, thank you everyone for listening. I hope this was
a great one.
This is why art exists. This is why the movies exist. This is why we have to have these movies. Like, it is just, it's so perfect. It just made me so happy. And until next time, everyone, please keep it spooky.
Keep it face.
Keep it face. Okay, you
keep it.
Keep it face. Keep it face.
Don't forget to follow us at Ruin Podcast and Crooked Media for show updates. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okolade.